Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show.
Our Friday baseball doubleheader continues in an hour. Last night, the Astros rallied for a walk-off win. Tonight, Ronaldo Lopez looks to even up the series. White Sox, Stros baseball night in Chicago begins their coverage at 6:30, and then Jason and Steve have the call at 7. Meanwhile, all good things must come to an end. The Cubs' six-game winning streak is over as they lose to the Reds again. Plus, Theo Epstein talks Yu Darvish. When will he be back? Does anybody know? And NBA free agency continues. What will the Bulls do with anything? Plus, no news yet on Zach LaVine. Is that good or bad news for the Bulls? Vincent Goodwill is here to discuss tonight on Sports Talk Live. Here we go. Happy Friday. Welcome. It is Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Chuck Arfine in for David Kaplan today. Let's meet the panel. We got a good one from Crane's Business. It is Danny Ecker from Bleacher Report and the Big Ten Unfiltered podcast, Seth Gruen from the Associated Press, Jay Cohen. And look who's with me again, Vincent Goodwill, covering the Bulls. Good to see you here, Vinny.
It's the reunion, Chuck.
It's the reunion, yeah. I'm not on the Bulls anymore. I'm covering the White Sox.
I don't see you. I don't get to educate you about basketball anymore.
Is that how it went?
I think so.
Really? Why did I not learn anything that you educated me? Why don't you educate all of us about Zach LaVine? What is going on? He's a restricted free agent. The Kings are reportedly interested in signing him to an offer sheet. What's going to happen?
Today is kind of an interesting day, I think, coming up, Chuck. Today is the first day that a restricted free agent can sign to an offer sheet. So while nothing has happened yet, I would not be surprised if something happened relatively soon.
Okay. So maybe the Kings would sign him to an offer sheet.
Maybe.
And what kind of money would that possibly be, you think?
I mean, I'm not in any boardrooms or anything that, but considering what the Bulls have offered, considering what Zach wants, I would not be surprised if it was somewhere around the $20 million a year range, maybe a little bit less, but somewhere in that general vicinity. And it's going to leave the Bulls, if that happens, it's going to leave the Bulls in a compromised position where to see if they match it or not.
Do you think in Zach's mind, he would like to come back to the Bulls and see if he could be that juggernaut here, that star player?
Well, I think he always wanted to be that from the moment that he was traded here. Mm-hmm. You know, they sold to him, you're the guy, you're the franchise cornerstone. They didn't expect Lauri Markkanen to come along and to sort of be more advanced than any rookie, you know, that they've had in a long time. But I do think that Zach wants that. The problem is, I think there's going to be some hurt feelings, you know, and there's some mended fences that are going to have to happen between the organization and Zach, and they're going to have to, you know, basically say and commit to him, you're our guy, and reiterate that to him.
So it sounds like you think Markkanen's emergence gives them a little leverage. Do you think they should use that? Because you talk about hurt feelings.
Sounds like they have.
Sounds like they have used that.
Well, I mean, to the extent that they have and say, hey, you know, let him walk.
No, I don't think that they can afford to let him walk. A, you don't have that type of talent base where you can afford to let someone like that walk out of your building because they want a couple million more than what you're willing to pay. Like, that would be completely short-sighted. You're still trying to build this thing up, and Lauri Markkanen, as good as he is not ready to carry a franchise, and we're not sure he's going to carry a franchise. So with Zach there being the more experienced player, being the guy that I think is capable of being that guy, assuming that he's completely healthy from the ACL surgery and driven to do it, I think it's a good investment if the Bulls wind up matching the offer, if an offer comes.
Do you think there's any real impact on this decision in particular, just this whole landscape-shifting LeBron move and what's now in the East and the open, you know, does everyone take a deep breath and say, wait a minute, there's an opportunity here? I mean, obviously, we don't know where all the chips are going to land here, of course, but it just seems like, I wonder whether this one move and what's happening now in the East, does that change the timeline or the way that the Bulls are looking at any of this and who is part of their core for the future and who's not?
I don't think so. I don't think the Bulls think in that way. I don't think they think in the, you know, big picture, 30,000 feet view of, okay, LeBron is going, so now we're going to be closer to, you know, contention, like they can see the light. I think that they're trying to slow walk this as much as possible. They're keeping their cap books dry basically over the next couple of years. They're not trying to go out and sign free agents or anything like that. You don't know if the coach you have is going to be here long term. You don't know what players that you have young or old, are going to be here long term when you're ready to contend. So there's no inherent pressure from Jerry or Michael Reinsdorf to get these guys contending right now.
There's a this situation with Levine. I mean, this is just really a matter of numbers. They wanted to let him test the market. They could as a restricted free agent. They obviously would like him at a number, I would guess, probably somewhere around 17 to 19 million. I think the Kings know what number that's going to make the Bulls uncomfortable, so they're obviously going to come with a contract like that. What number do the Bulls walk away from? I mean, if the Kings come with something 23, 24 per, I mean, at what point do the Bulls say, this is not going to work for
I us? Think if you get into the mid-20s or something past that, I think you're going to make the Bulls really have a serious look at themselves. Now, the Kings could do things where they have a base salary and they put in like a 15% trade kicker or something like that. That would elevate the salary if he gets traded, and maybe that gives the Bulls something to think about. Who knows if they do something like that? But if it's, you know, 4 years and 76, 77, somewhere around there, and the Bulls are offering 4 and 72, like, can you really quibble over that at this stage of the game if you're the Bulls? You can only pass it up if you're petty.
I don't think the Bulls are going to blink it. Anything less than 20. I mean, if the Kings don't come with anything over 20, I mean, they'll just run that bad boy up there real quick and get the. It's. I think you're right. I think when you get into the mid-20s, I think that would cause the Bulls a lot of pause, I would guess.
Well, my thing is, it's less about the actual dollar amount, you know, with the Bulls, because everybody knows the perception, you know, and the thought is, basically, and me and Chuck have talked about this many a times, and all of us have talked about this, where anytime Garin Paak says something, there's a general disbelief coming from the public. So if Garin Paak tells us the sky's blue, then damn it, the sky's green today. So it doesn't matter. So they say Zach LaVine is a cornerstone, we're still going to say, no, he's not, because we don't trust you guys. So when you come down to something like this, there's going to be an opposite side of it that says, we don't really know if Zach is going to be this good, A, because of the injury, and B, because of Garin Paak. And unfortunately, that's kind of where things sit.
Well, where I sit is that I don't know what I'm going to get from Zach LaVine, because he was hurt for half the year and his numbers weren't that great. So do I want to spend $20 million a year on Zach LaVine?
But you made that trade knowing you would have to probably do that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And this is beyond, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, this is beyond an injury thing with him a little bit. There's a little bit of question of, you know, will he be able to do some of the stuff, like in terms of, does he have the drive to be a $25 million player? You know, does he, you know, defensively, is he going to show up every night? You know what I mean? Because if you pay a guy like that, you know, you expect him to be there if his shot's off trying to do other things.
Absolutely. But here's the thing. When you traded for a guy, it's not like he was a rookie with no tape or anything like that.
Yeah.
You knew that he was a third option on the Minnesota team that was very young, that he wasn't necessarily a great defensive player. And you don't have a great defensive coach in Fred Hoiberg. So where is he going to learn these defensive habits? Now, do you expect him to take what's been given to him, an opportunity, and run with it? Absolutely. But you can't run away from that as a franchise, because Lauri Markkanen turned out to be a lot better than you thought. In my opinion, this is the best of both worlds. This makes the trade much more palatable if you were not a fan of the Jimmy Butler trade a year ago to begin with. You got two really high-level players, and yeah, he's coming off an injury, but you knew that. And you know more than any other franchise in the history of the NBA how to deal with ACL injuries, or better yet, how not to deal with ACL injuries. So to me, they have more internal intel than anybody. There's no way they can screw this up.
See the
famous last words. It's interesting. I'll be interested to see, do they have the conviction? It's an interesting moment for them, because it would be easy for them to match the number, say, you know, we plan to do this all along. This guy's a cornerstone of our future. Where maybe internally they're like, boy, we spent too much money on this. It'd be interesting to see if they have the conviction to walk away from this if they have to.
But then they had
that. That's going to look
that
so
was,
bad.
But you know what I mean? There's a number where they shouldn't do it. We all know it. There's a number where they shouldn't
do it. But to me,
if it's 25, 26 million, I understand. But if they are offering 20 million a year and they walk away, that's like,
I don't see them doing that.
To me, for any executive, predicting the way the market is going to take shape is part of your job. So if they walk away from Zach LaVine, to me, it's an incredible indictment on that front office and their inability to have foresight. Because
or Zach LaVine. Could be an indictment on him.
Maybe, but the whole point of the trade.
I'm not saying
you didn't
it is.
Trade
I get
for
what
last season.
Right.
You made the trade to be in the driver's seat this summer. And they knew they would have to match some sort of offer. I don't know if it's that $20 million number, but
who knows what they thought. If they believed, and this is a negotiating tactic.
Right.
You come in, you tell a guy, hey, don't worry about minutes, don't worry about rushing to get on the floor, get yourself healthy, play a certain amount of games so we can know going into the season that you're right. And then turn around and say, hey, you weren't really productive in those 24 games that you showed that we didn't want to rush you back on the floor and have you playing 35 to 40 minutes a night and use those analytics and those stats to depress your value. It's a two-way street.
I wish he had one more year. Like, I just, they didn't have enough time to really see what he could do. But that was the situation they knew they were getting into in the first place.
And think about it. He was the known commodity of the three players that they drafted. And he was coming off of an ACL injury. Yeah. So what does that say about their evaluation process? Either they had to really believe in him or they were that desperate to get off of Jimmy Butler. Narrative. Yeah. Always a key word around here.
Yes. You'll be writing something very soon about that. Let me get your thoughts on free agency. I mean, are the Bulls going to do anything, or do you wait till next year?
I think it sounds like the Cubs before 2016. Wait till next year. Yeah. I think that's what's going to happen, but I think it's a smart play. You let these guys grow a little bit more. Markkanen, Dunn, Levine, you see what they get in the full season. They barely played any minutes together. And you have more cap space next year. I don't know if they're going to be a player in free agency like that next year, but at least it gives you more time to evaluate what you have, to evaluate Fred Hoiberg, and you figure stuff out. There's no advantage to you having to get into free agency this year.
I like where this Bulls team's going, Vincent Goodwill.
Where are they going, Chuck?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen with Zach LaVine, but they're going to match it. They're going to match it, right?
Depends on
Chuck.
I can't. Gonna match.
How long have you worked in this town, Chuck?
But this seems like they.
Now I see why Cap is bald, and you're on the way there because you are tripping.
They acquired him for a reason. I believe they're just being good negotiators.
So wait. The Kings throw 5 years, $125 million. You're gonna match?
I said again.
Kings say 5 years, $125 million.
Well, they can't offer the fifth.
Yeah. That means 100 million. You're gonna match?
But
that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
And if you're the Kings, you're not making an offer unless you can make the Bulls uncomfortable.
I don't think the Kings are going to offer $25 million.
They have to consider the implications of doing that, too.
Well, it's the Kings. I mean, if we're going to talk about a franchise that makes even less sense than the Bulls, you've got the Kings.
Oh, my God.
That's true.
What are they saying in Sacramento about Zach LaVine, you think?
That's an interesting question because they have a good young team over there. And Zach would probably be the most accomplished of the young players, Bagley and all those other guys they got. So I could see him fitting in theoretically.
I believe you're right. If the contract offer is what we all think it is, then yes, the Bulls will match.
Right.
But there's got to be a number where they are willing to walk away from it.
I can't see the Kings going, okay, $25 million, we're all in on Zach LaVine.
Boy, I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks when they see that. You know, I'll be dropping you on the quick little note.
All right, well, we will find out. Maybe tonight, possibly. All right. Cincinnati Reds are the greatest team in baseball. Actually, they're playing the best baseball in the National League. They beat the Cubs again. Meanwhile, Theo spoke. He discussed trades, and Yu Darvish will have his comments and discuss. By the way, great seeing you, Vincent Goodwill.
Ask Vince, ask Chuck, right back on the scene again.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
There it is. And I appreciate the line about my hair.
You got great hair, Chuck.
If you love baseball, you can't miss NBC Sports Chicago's newest show, Baseball Night in Chicago. Between Ozzie Guillen, Doug Glanville, Bill Melton, David DeJesus, there's never a dull moment. For complete listings and guest information, visit NBCSportsChicago.com/Baseball Night in Chicago.
All right, the Cubs lost to the Reds today, 3-2. The Reds tied with the Astros for the best record in the majors since June the 10th. The Reds have won 5 in a row against the Cubs. So my question is, why can't the Cubs beat the Reds? Seth Gruen?
I have no idea, because obviously the Cubs were playing pretty darn well.
Yeah. They won 6
heading into this one. Sometimes baseball is just about randomness. Look, it is a game of circumstance a lot of times. A broken bat single breaks up, you know, a Kerry Wood perfect game or something like that. There's randomness to it, and I guess they've just hit the Reds at the wrong time. But what concerns me more is it seems like when the Cubs win, the Brewers win. When the Cubs lose, the Brewers lose.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be about catching those guys in Milwaukee. They are very, very good.
And what's so weird is it's winning record against Milwaukee, losing record against the Reds this year, I believe it is, right? I mean, it's just kind of a strange, you know, but that's baseball, and that's why. And the Cubs should not be worried when you're in that position they are at this point in the season.
Right, and no one's going to sit here and say that the Reds are better than the Cubs. That'd be idiotic. But the reality is the season's 162 games for a reason, and that's because a really bad team can beat a really good team on any given day.
The Reds have played really well.
They need to acquire some starting pitching.
They pitched very well. And
if they get some established pitching, like when I saw the Jacob deGrom and Noah Syndergaard, I'm like, they should trade for those guys.
Yeah. The Reds have also caught the Cubs at the right time. Like you say, it depends. You know, last week, a couple weeks ago when they swept them in Cincinnati, four-gamer, they caught the Cubs very disheveled with their pitching, mm-hmm. some serious problems there. And, you know, they've just kept winning. It's not just the Cubs they're beating. I mean, they've beaten a lot of really good teams, and the Cubs, you know, just rolled through the Tigers and Twins, who are both awful. So, I mean, you know, it's just timing and where you are, I guess, of the season.
All right, Theo Epstein spoke with reporters before the game today. A lot of questions about the trade deadline, which is coming up at the end of the month, and will he make any moves? What's the market like? Here's what he had to say.
You're always looking to fortify and to add a little bit, and you always have plans B and plan C in case of injury or really bad performance. But, you know, I don't think, there's no way we're going to go out and acquire starters the caliber of a locked-in Kyle Hendricks or a locked-in Jose Quintana and guys like that. And so the majority of our answers lie within, for sure. That's how we're looking at it.
When I hear him say that, I'm thinking, okay, they're going after a high-caliber starter.
Yeah, and he's
not going to say, I am going to look for that.
I just can't believe that, because every general manager of any contending team makes a move at the deadline. I remember Jim Hendry said after 0-3, I couldn't go back into that clubhouse and not have done something. So they're going to do something. Now, to make the kind of move that Theo alluded to, I think we all know they'd have to do something at the major league level. A big name player would be out the door, and that's why a lot of people have thrown around Addison Russell's name. But, you know, the minor league system is too bereft of talent to really make any significant move. So that's kind of where you buy into it. But they're going to do something.
Right.
Maybe not major, but maybe minor, but they're going to do something.
Yeah, he's going to be asking everybody about everybody, because that's what he does. That's what his job is to do. But they're not – I mean, I'd be really surprised if they did something major, because at this point they're going to have to dip into their major league roster to do it. Yeah. And they're not going to part with Happ or Russell or any of those guys. I think you look and see what they could do. I think – you could see them try and get somebody who could pitch the 7th or 8th or maybe later, because of, you know, Edwards just came back today. Morrow has been really interesting in terms of how they have handled him. And usually bullpen arms are on the cheaper side this time of year. You know, the name I think to keep an eye on is Zach Britton with Baltimore. What they're going to need, what the Cubs are going to need, is a team that is far enough away from contending that they might be willing to take some low class A, couple years away guys, mm-hmm. because, you know, they don't have anything at the top. So maybe you could swing something with a couple of minor leaguers for a guy like Britton, who could close if they need it.
And he is accomplished. I mean,
but accomplished.
Right, I think that the Cubs are just going to have a lot of problems trying to do a deal with just some minor league players. They just don't have it. You know, are they unwilling to part with Russell or Happ? I'm not so sure about that.
I'm not,
because
you're trading a known for maybe an unknown.
Well, Javi Baez is potentially a shortstop of the future. I think he has a higher ceiling. Mm-hmm. Addison Russell, you trust more to make those routine plays, but you know.
This is about financial control a little bit with Russell too. I mean, they have some big contracts coming up, and they still have a lot of control left for Russell.
All right, as for you, Darvish, he got a new diagnosis today, a right elbow impingement and inflammation. He received a cortisone shot. No timetable for his return, and the Cubs say they are not going to rush him. He hasn't started since May the 20th. I mean, you're talking end of July probably before he takes the mound again for the major league team, right?
I think, honestly, this is the biggest question for the Cubs the rest of the season. When you talk about what moves they are or aren't going to make, this is the biggest factor that impacts everything.
The now and the whole season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they made their bed with this acquisition. And, you know, do you see the Cubs making some move that will – make up for the fact that Yu Darvish is either not back for a long time or not himself?
And I think that's it. I think that's the answer. I think what they will do is because this is their whole season. A healthy Yu Darvish, they are a contending team. A non-healthy Yu Darvish, if he's not back, you don't know. And they don't want to take that risk. So I feel like they will get if not a high caliber starting pitcher or someone close to it to make up for it just in case.
Yeah, I mean, they'll go out and trade for one?
I agree.
I mean, how?
And then
they'll find a way. They'll do it. Maybe it's Addison Russell.
I agree. I don't think.
But wait, if you don't have, if Yu Darvish is not healthy.
Well, that's, you're absolutely right there, but they're not, the biggest second half of the season acquisition they get, the biggest player they will get is Darvish. Simple as that. You know what I mean? They won't be able to go out and get somebody. What they will do is they will slow play Darvish. They will literally rest him, err on the weak side of caution, and bring him back slowly. Give him 3 or 4 minor league rehab starts, and you'll see him back in early to mid-August. And that'll be the biggest acquisition.
You're putting your whole season on Darvish.
Exactly. But you did that when you gave him the contract. You have to go slow with him because you've made a commitment to him. And that's the whether he is healthy and can rediscover his form.
I'm bringing in somebody like a James Shields, someone who his contract's up at the end of this year, as insurance for Yu Darvish. That's what I would do. But I'm not Theo Epstein. I'm nowhere near him. Up next, we're talking White Sox. Michael Kopech lasted only 3 innings last night. Is there a chance he doesn't get called up this year? White Sox talk coming up next.
Join NBC Sports Chicago at Guaranteed Rate Field this summer for authentic fan nights featuring free giveaways, cheer cards, and live broadcasts at the Shy Sox Bar and Grill before the game. For more information, including dates, visit NBCSportsChicago.com/WhiteSoxAF.
All right, Michael Kopech struggled last night, gave up 4 runs in 3 innings, but here's what happened. First inning, he's just getting squeezed by the umpire. That would have been a strike 3 right there, and then that would have been strike 3, and those are balls. He's all bummed. He's not happy with the umpire. Almost has to get separated here. Yeah, he's screaming at him. He had to go 41 pitches in the first inning, gave up 2 runs on no hits in the first inning, and eventually gave up. You know, they hit this guy with the bases loaded. So Kopech struggled, but he didn't get help from the umpire. My question for you guys is, his ERA is 4.70. Do you think he spends the whole year in AAA?
I mean, when you see something like that, it does raise that question, because emotions are something he hasn't been able to necessarily control. I know he broke his hand at one point, some other issues. So, you know, he's got to better himself in that department before.
He also has a 4.70 ERA. Well, I mean, we didn't expect him to have an ERA that high this late in the year.
Yeah, if you're the White Sox, cool. I mean, I don't see any problem with this. If you're the White Sox, you're like, have him learn right now what it's like to get squeezed, because Lord knows it'll happen in the majors, and he can't react like the way he seemingly reacted there.
Yeah, I mean, what's the benefit of bringing him up other than, you know, outside of a September call-up if he wants to get a start and getting a little experience under his belt? But it's just kind of interesting to watch this, by the way, just the juxtaposition of what we just saw the last few years with the Cubs is that it's so pitching-focused. You know, it's such a different thing that we had with the Cubs with all these hitters and not enough pitchers. Now you have all these pitchers. It's kind of interesting.
Well, that is a wrap for Sports Talk Live presented by the Chevy Silverado. Have a great weekend. Baseball Night in Chicago is next, followed by the White Sox and Astros. I'll see you on the postgame show. Have a great weekend. We'll see you.